today, I'm with principal designer and founder of VDA Inc., David Breen. David has run this organization for over 3 decades, and it's an award-winning full-service event design and experiential marketing agency. And really, the focus is on creating unique, customized event designs in both the physical and virtual worlds. So he's really mastered this, and I'm excited to speak with him. He was featured as one of the best in Boston in Inc. magazine in 2021 and 2022. He's a graduate of Emerson College with a degree in technical theater and design. So he really has used his experience in college to do what he just loves to do. I'm excited to take a walk and learn who David is as a human being and what challenges he's faced in leadership and what is the secret sauce to his success. Join us. So here we are, David. It is so nice to meet you.
Thank you as well.
Just for you listeners, David and I are in, where are we? The Mount Auburn Cemetery.
Yes.
Which is spectacular. It's a little overcast on this August day. But it's interesting because you were referred to me, and I now understand why. Because, and I want to hear from you, but this, you being the founder and the creative behind VDA, which is experiential marketing,
yes,
is all about being, right?
Yes.
It's in the space of being and experience.
Absolutely.
So right. I just open that up for some conversation. What the heck got you involved in this some, how many years, 35 years ago?
38. Yes, I was a young, 28-year-old. Doing theater, teaching in high schools and doing theater. And on the side, I was doing this thing called industrial theater, which was the precursor to what we now know as corporate events.
Interesting.
And I tell the story all the time of my first event was with Fram Oil Filters in Miami, Florida, setting up literally a Broadway style show in the middle of a meeting. So they would have their meeting, and then we stopped the meeting, we set up the show, we did the show, and then we took everything down, and then they went back to their meeting. There was no connection to the brand like there is now. And so I fell in love with this. I thought, wow, this is really fun. And so I took a hiatus from teaching, thinking it would be, 5 years or so, make some money, this will be fun. And here I am. 38 years later, still involved in this industry, which then was very fledgling. And so what I found and what I loved was that the discovery of how you can make people come together by creating environments that sort of gave them a reason to gather. The visual environment that they were in, focused now on the brand, but even then just guiding them, wayfinding, discovery. We call it, surprise and delight.
Mm.
So what's next around the corner? What do you see when you come into the room? How do you experience the environment? And does it align now with the goals that the particular company might have put forward for their attendees? What do they want them to have? What do they want them to feel when they leave?
Right.
How do they want them to perceive the company? Is it a company like a Fidelity? Very rock stable, and they don't really push the envelope. They don't go too far modern, right? They want to show that stability as an organization because they're handling people's money. Or a company like Raytheon Technologies, which is pushing the envelope of everything. And so they want to show LED lights and brightness and so
right.
on. PTC company, which is based in Boston. Those are very modern focused companies. So how you approach their brand, how they want to be perceived, how their employees see them, and how their partners and customers might see them are all very, very carefully curated.
Right, and integrated.
And
right?
very integrated.
Right.
And so I just loved watching this and being part of this develop from what was what we used to jokingly call a lot of geometric shapes put together in an interesting way.
Right.
Now, it's far more thoughtful. While it was very pretty and creative back then, it didn't align
Right.
You know, I mean, Prudential was one of my first clients. And I just remember it. Other than The Rock, there was really nothing else about Prudential as a company that was represented in any of the environments that we created.
That is fascinating.
So that's kind of how I got into it.
I love it. And so for you, 38 years, your role has to have shifted.
Just a little.
Yeah, yeah. So what keeps you going? Like, even in the business, but also as a human, like, what
right.
is it?
I mean, right now, one of the biggest things, especially since the pandemic, is the new generation, as I like to refer to them. I call them my newbies.
I love it. I love it.
You know, I have a, I would say at this point, 40% of my staff is younger than my company.
Isn't that amazing?
Maybe 50%
right.
of the staff
right.
is younger than my company. And I love these 20-somethings and even early 30-somethings coming into this industry and discovering all this way that they can be storytellers.
Yes.
In a creative, physical, environmental way, rather than just journalism or drawing pretty pictures, so to speak. And I love watching them grow. I love mentoring them. I love teaching them the things that I've learned, the mistakes I've made. Hopefully they still make a few, because that's how you learn. But that's one of the things that keeps me going all the time, is that new opportunity to see the industry thrive with the next generation of thought, how they see the world. Their perspective, of course, is very different than mine, as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I learn from them every day. And I'm, you know, I'm sitting in these meetings and I have a 23-year-old graphic designer who says something with an idea. And I'm like, oh my God, that's brilliant.
Right.
I never thought that's a
right.
Let's go that way.
Right.
And the smile on her face.
Right. That you're empowering
her. She recognizes that. Oh, this guy who's been running this company all this time just recognized an idea I had. You know, I love to see that that delight appear, because then they're motivated to keep being open to sharing their thoughts. Otherwise, if you say, oh, that's dumb, that doesn't work.
Right.
You know, you're just shutting them down and you're not getting the best opportunities.
Right,
you know,
that right.
come forward for the client or even for the concepts that you're trying to put together.
Yeah, that's so beautifully put. And so it sounds as if you are big on culture and creating a culture of curiosity.
It's everything.
Yes.
You know, it's a battle every day to not fall into the, you know, we all have those days when it's a negative space, right? You're just like, rah, 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 you know, got in a car accident this morning, you know, my coffee spilled, you know, and you come in and the client's being difficult and all of that. And it's difficult to make sure that there's a recognition. It's like, yeah. Let it go. You know,
right.
Let's focus on what we're trying to achieve here and so on. And so building that culture, recognizing the value that everyone brings to the table, even when they're having a bad day, is important. And of course, running a company of creatives, which the majority of my people are, is, you know, the running joke, and you've heard it all the time, is, you know, the herding of cats mindset, right?
Then, yeah.
It's not so much cats, but the idea that everyone that is creative, that comes from an inner place. The ideas that you put forward, they can be scary to represent. They can be scary to put out there because they're you, right? They're your idea, and so there's a personalization that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so making sure that there's a culture that is safe, I guess, is a way to put it.
I would say that.
You know, that they feel like, okay, I can say this, and even if it's not an idea that resonates or fits or gets used, I'm not going to get chastised for, you know, this may be a silly idea, but, right? And I love those opening statements, because you know that they're pushing the envelope somewhere.
You got
they're
it.
Going
you want
someplace.
That. You want that.
Right? They're going someplace that maybe everybody else was afraid to go or wasn't sure that it made sense, you know? And I love that I can create a space where those conversations can happen. Years and years ago, I mean, we're going back, you know, when you've been doing it so long, where you have lots of stories.
True.
But you know, my director of inventory, right, the guy who runs my inventory or manager of my inventory, comes out of the theater world.
Yes.
And we were sitting down to have an ideation session around some theme event that a client wanted. And so I said, well, let's invite so-and-so in and let's invite so-and-so. And everybody's like, why? And I said, well, you know, they live in a different world than we live in. They're not so much in the corporate side.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up using his idea and presenting that to the client. And it's what sold the job. And it was, everybody kind of went, oh, wow. You know, because you think it's, well, the creative team has to get together and have a creative session around all these ideas. And I'm like, everybody is creative.
Right.
Everybody. You look all the time. I'm amazed sometimes, especially in the new world age with TikTok and Instagram and all these video memes that come out and so on. The level of creativity that comes out of humanity. There's
so
a lot
true.
Of silliness. Don't misunderstand. But the level of creativity is amazing. I just watch these people doing these, you know, mother-daughter dances and all these little things. And I'm like, that is so cool. And they're not, you know, they would never consider themselves creative, right?
Exactly.
If you said to them, you know, what do you do? It's like, well, I, you know, I'm a bookkeeper, or I, you know, I do some, you know, what they would consider a non-creative endeavor. And yet here they are doing some amazing stuff that they're sharing with the world.
Well, and it sounds like you are, as leader, okay with endorsing and corralling fail forward, right?
Absolutely.
Like failure.
Absolutely.
Well, it's so interesting because in a lot of the clients where we work with them in the cultures division, it's a fear of failure that blocks and stops and keeps us stuck in a systemic way of being, you know, and especially for companies. I mean, mine's 35 years, 38. You really have to, you as a leader, have to press the envelope. So talk to me about how you've done that. I mean, you model it for one, right? You invite others in for inclusive thought and different points of view. Is there, what else?
There's a saying that I've used for years and years and years. Everybody makes mistakes.
Yes.
And I have said this the entire time the company has been in existence. I have never fired someone as a blaming. Oh, you screwed up.
Right.
Goodbye.
Right.
I've always said, okay, yes, you've made a mistake. Uh-huh. Yes, it cost the company a lot of money or lost a client or whatever the level might have been. But it's always, don't do it again.
Yes. Yes.
Did you learn? What was the result? And I always say, I'm not interested in the blaming of who made a bad choice. I'm interested in knowing why you made the choice.
Mm-hmm.
And let's think about, maybe you were justified in that choice with the knowledge you had
at the time.
Moment. And let's look at maybe how a different choice could have been made or how you could have engaged someone else that might have more knowledge in that arena, right? Whatever it might have been. And so that's a really big, important piece to me, is that there's this sense of not blaming the individual for what happened, but recognizing where the mistake was made or why the choice was made, and then working towards resolving it. And you know what? Next day, a different one pops up in a different part of
the
company.
So true. It's so true.
That is not a one-time fix. That item might be, but not the other one. And you know, the pandemic brought that very much into light because you know, we had lots of processes in place for our physical work.
Right.
Well, then we shifted to virtual.
I know. Right?
And we created what we thought were good processes at that time.
Right.
And they worked, and we survived, and we, you know, came out of it fairly strong, thankfully. And then we went back to doing the physical.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we'd forgotten all those processes that we had put in place.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, we're in the middle of doing this, and this problem would occur, and I'm like, oh, we solved this 10 years ago.
Mm.
And everybody went, oh, yeah, we did. Right?
Yes.
You know? And remembering to then go back and revisit, oh, we always used to do it this way. How come we stopped? So, 'cause we hadn't done it in 2 years.
Right, right.
So it fell off of the books. Maybe someone left in the pandemic, and they were the one that was responsible for sort of managing. You know, we're not that big a company, right? So
how many are you again?
35 full-time employees.
Such a great number.
So it's great. Yeah.
Such a great
number. I know
them. And you know them. Yeah, you said that to
me
the phone, remember? No, this is great. Oh, this is when I really thought, oh, I can't wait to walk with you, because I asked you about growth.
Right.
And you said, I don't know their names.
I made the choice to not become. There are agencies that have been in business for longer than me, even shorter than me, that are huge, big agencies, hundreds and hundreds of employees all around the country.
Right.
And I probably had the capacity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't the business I wanted to run. It wasn't the life I wanted to live. I didn't want to be the boss of this big conglomerate. You know, I like to design. I like strategy. I like meeting with clients and coming up with solutions to their goals and problems that they put forward. Challenges might be a better word. And so for me, I built the company so that I get to play.
You get to play in the space.
In the space I love, which is the creative space. As I jokingly say, I like to, you know, sit around and draw pretty pictures. That's what I
love. Well,
but it's a little more than that.
Yeah,
but,
you're bringing.
But for me, you know, it was so important to not grow so big that it just became this big to do. And what you're referring when we spoke earlier was when we did Jordan's Furniture in Natick. We built a Mardi Gras inside the store.
Yes.
You know, shopper and entertainment. Shoppertainment was the
Shoppertainment, right? I love it.
And I was sitting there one evening as we were putting the lighting together and focusing the lights and so on. Elliot and I were sitting in the middle of this Bourbon Street environment we created in the leather chairs that we dragged out of the leather department.
Section.
Section, because he wanted to sit down. He said, well, let's go get a chair. So, you know, we went and got the most comfortable ones we could find. And he and I were sitting there as my lighting team was doing the work. And he said to me, I envy you. And I'm thinking to myself, here's this very successful businessman who's running, and he's known by everyone in New England, right? I mean, everyone knew Barry and Elliot. I mean, my goodness, every advertisement on TV at the time and so on. And I thought to myself, you envy me? Mm. You know, at the time, you know, I was maybe 18 employees, you know, a lot of freelance, but, you know, full time. And he said, yeah, he said, there was a time when I knew all of my employees. I knew their family. I knew where they lived. You know, I knew something about them. He said, I don't have that anymore. He said, I have a cadre of people, of course. He said, but I miss that.
Right.
He said, and it's part of the choice that you had.
Sure. Sure, and, as you grow.
This was, you know, 1998. And you know, so we were in the middle of our lifespan, if you will, right? I started the company in 85. So we were 13 years. And that was it was a real defining moment for me to recognize, like, do I want to hold on to this? Mm-hmm. Where do I want this to go? And he wanted to be bigger than I was, but. And it was an interesting statement because I still to this day love that I can bump into people when I wander the floor. Mm-hmm. You know, just go, you know, finally get out of my office, out of the Zoom chair, or the creative space, and go for a wander. And I know people, and I can ask them questions. Oh, how was your trip to Costa Rica? How was the visit? Oh, did you get up to Maine like you do every summer? Right? And they feel like, oh, he's paying attention.
Right.
He knows who I am. And so they're more invested in the company.
Sure.
I mean, there are six of my employees that have been with me for close to 30 years.
Uh-huh.
And then the next is sort of, as you can see the growth phase of the company. And then there's the next group that are like the 20-year kind of folks who, you know, there's another 10 in there and so on. And I'd like to believe that it's because we empower them to have autonomy in their decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
We hold them accountable when they fail in some way, which is inevitable in every one of us, myself very much included.
And when you fail, what do you do with that? As do you talk about it? Do you model it? Because I think vulnerability with us as leaders is really critical.
It's critical. It's critical. I always say, that's on me.
Right.
I made the choice. And then I explain. Just like I ask my other folks, what was the basis for your reasoning when you made this choice?
Right.
I will then explain my reasoning. I said, this is what I thought. Uh-huh. This is what I perceived. This is where I thought we were going. This is what the data told me. This is what my eyes told me. This is what my history told me. And I was wrong.
Right. Right. Right.
I was wrong. I said, this is fully on me. I said, so now this is what I believe we can do. And I'm looking for anybody that wants to suggest other thoughts, but this is where I believe we can either turn or go or continue down the path, but put in these safeguards or whatever they may be. But no, absolutely. And everyone knows that about me. That is, I'm the first person to say, yep, that's on me.
Mm-hmm.
That was a bad choice.
Well, and that just creates the trust in the environment, right?
Absolutely. I hope so.
Yes.
I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, them recognizing that they can feel comfortable to come to me when there's an issue.
Right.
And I always say that to them. It's like, you know, we have directors, and you know, we have a hierarchy of process that exists because it's kind of necessary to run any company with something like that. Can't have everybody reporting to David.
No. How many do report into you?
I have six department leads. Okay. So I have, you know, operations and creative and finance and sales and production management, which is the people that run the on-site shows, and then the production team, which is the project management team, and production team, which is the folks who build all the scenery. So that's the those are the ones that are direct to me, and we meet every week. But I'm more than content to have someone out of the welding shop come up and ask me a question.
Sure, sure.
Come ask me a question, especially because my role isn't just the founder, CEO, president, whatever title you want to put. The role that I most love is my principal designer role. So I want them to see me there first, so that if it's a job that they're working on and they have a question about color, if they're in the paint shop, or material, if they're in the carpentry shop, or whatever, come talk to me.
Right.
I designed it. I know what I'm thinking.
Right.
You might have a better idea. And I say that to my team all the time. This is what I was thinking, but I'm open to your suggestions because you know the materials even better than I do. You touch them every day.
Right.
And so, you know, again, back to that, empowering them to bring their ideas into the discussion is, I think, an important part of why so many of them have stayed with me for so long.
Well, and I think especially in the creative space, listen, I'm one of those that says I'm not creative, and I know I am.
But
I think creatives tend to want to feel their idea because it comes from within. They're very attached to it.
Very much so.
And so you have to be willing to be detached, right?
Yes.
And if and it sounds like you model that, though.
We say it all the time. We just recently had a client, and they wanted to put a particular display in a certain area, and I really fought to orient it in a different approach because of how it would be seen by clients attending and so on. And they fought me and fought me, and finally I went, okay, I'm not going to fight this anymore. You're the client.
Right.
I don't have a personal investment in it, just a creative professional investment.
Right.
And you learn to just
step back off.
And I say that to my team all the time. If the client wants to paint it pink, then paint it pink.
Right.
Even if you know that it's a bad choice,
yes.
You don't just say, okay, explain again why. This is why I don't think pink is a good idea. This is why, whatever, I'm using pink as an example.
Right.
Maybe the barbecue.
But
at some point, you have to remove yourself from your attachment to that creative.
Right.
And recognize that it's now the client's.
Yeah.
You've handed it to them. And now their opinions have at least equal value to yours, if not at times more.
Right, and are taking form, right? It's the dance. It's the dance.
We say all the time, as soon as you put out a design, I say to everybody, I said, now everybody's a designer. Because everybody on the client team is going to have an opinion about what you put forward. And if you take that personally, it's a short-lived career.
It's so true. But I think that's in
it's
life.
It's going to take you down.
Yeah, but I think that's in life. I think it's, what we're naming here is the ego.
Yes,
and the ego comes into that room, and you can feel it without the person even speaking.
Yeah.
And it's that need to be right.
Absolutely.
And you, right?
And the strong ones come in, and you recognize it right away, and you learn how to work around it and guide it, feed it, but also not be consumed by it. Right.
There's an energy. There's an energy there.
It's so true. And that's what every first client meeting is. And it's so difficult on Zoom.
I can't imagine.
As opposed to
in person,
where you can feel that aura. I mean, and we all have it, right? We all put out a particular, people think they see in color, but it's just an energy that is recognized. And, we went to a client meeting not long ago, and the CEO is a very knowledgeable, very powerful man, and it was evident. Everybody else in the room, they were letting him drive.
Yeah, they're afraid.
Yeah, they're afraid, and I'm like, well, that's not the world I want to live in, but I get it, and so we had to follow that lead a little.
You did. You had to defer a little bit.
Absolutely.
You had to defer.
Even though we were the the knowledge, and we were brought in for our knowledge. It's like,
well,
you had to be in little eggshells at
times. I know, but I also bet you were brought in to experience that.
Yes.
And maybe energetically to work on shifting
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
You know, without it being named.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah. Because a couple of my team were kind of like,
what do we do?
You really kind of went toe-to-toe with him a little bit.
You
and
need
I said, well,
to.
I said, I'm the same age as he is.
Exactly. Said, what do you have to lose?
I've been doing this a long time.
Right.
This is my knowledge base.
Right.
So I'm going to represent it.
Right.
He can choose to not accept it. That's okay.
Sure.
I said, but I'm not going to back down when I believe that I have more knowledge than he does in a particular area. Now, he might know his products and all
sure.
that kind of thing.
Sure.
So it's important to know when you can. And right, you know, you made an interesting statement. What did I have to lose?
Well, you don't care.
Maybe a client.
So what?
But is he worth it?
No. No,
do I want to put that kind of energy?
I am with you. I'm with you.
I have quote-unquote fired clients.
Yes.
Because it was, you know what? Yes, we can succeed at your event.
Right.
But the amount of energy.
It's going to take you and your team.
It's going to take. And the other places that energy can be put to clients who are going to much more represent the style and the culture and the people we want to work with. Because you know what? You come to work, you want to enjoy the day.
I agree.
You want to enjoy who you're talking to.
You want to enjoy your clients.
You want to enjoy the clients. You want to have relationships with those
right.
clients. And you want to develop them. I have clients that I've known for so long. And, you know, they've moved on to other companies and they've called and brought us in because they want us,
mm-hmm.
because they know they can trust us. We get on our weekly phone calls with them for some conference we might be running. And they say, oh, I love this hour because it's a safe space
right.
where I can just talk
right.
about my frustrations around whatever is going on. And then they know that we're not going to broadcast that or use it in a negative way.
Right. Or use it against them.
Right. And so you know, that trust that you build.
Oh, it's amazing.
Is why many of my clients have been with us so long. So such a long history of you know, committed relationships. Because as in anything in life, and you said it earlier, it's not just the business world.
Mm-mm.
We're living our lives. And yes,
so
we're
true.
At work.
Right.
But you're still who you are. You shouldn't be somebody else there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can be authentic with your clients,
mm-hmm.
just like hopefully you're authentic with your family
mm-hmm.
and friends, the relationships you build become so powerful that the client doesn't consider ever, even when a mistake is made, they don't consider
right.
moving on because they also recognize the humanity
exactly.
in the choices.
And, exactly.
And so... You're building that. I mean, I say this to my sales business development team all the time. We're in a relationship business. As a matter of fact, we have this running for years and years. We've had this running joke with clients, especially new clients, that it's very akin to dating.
It is. I agree.
You put out an idea.
Yes.
You put out a SOW or a statement of work, a proposal of some kind and so on. And then you wait. Oh, are they going to call? Did they like me?
Mm.
Did they like my idea? Mm. Is there going to be a second date? Right?
Yes.
You know, there's all these,
yes.
There's all these. It's so funny because we all fall into that same wanting
pattern.
To be liked.
Right.
Right. Wanting to be
accepted.
Right?
Yes. Worthy.
Yes. And so when you put yourself out there, as you do at the first coffee date or whatever in a romantic life, right? It's that same feeling. It's the same.
Mm.
You're hoping to be accepted and valued by that other person for who you were and the ideas you put forward. Or even, it might be a business idea, but it's still, you're part of it.
Sure.
You're connected to that concept.
Right. But this is the training, David, which I love how you said you love mentoring. Because I feel that, you know, the next generation's coming up, you and I are going to be retired
yes,
in maybe
right.
20 years. You know, you and I have talked about that
works,
too. We don't
right?
really feel like retiring,
no.
but someday we will. But the gift that we have to pay it forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, look, we're on Story Road.
Story Road.
But the gift that we have to pay it forward to train.
Yes.
Train
yes.
our salespeople. Because
yes.
what I'm trying to get a lot of our clients to see is that the slide decks are boring.
Oh, no.
They don't work.
No,
it's in
no.
the conversation. It's in the trust. But they're still globbing onto the deck because
yes.
we have data.
Yes.
But the
yes.
data alone is not going to get you the job, right? And this is in financial services, it's in insurance, sure. You know, and it is the authenticity of who we be yes. as humans.
Yes.
But that's hard to train to these up-and-coming salespeople mm-hmm. who have numbers to meet
yes, right,
and relationships to build. And right. you and I have been at this, and we were like, yeah, just be yourself.
Just have a conversation.
But
right.
honestly, it yeah. is about one conversation mm-hmm. at a time.
It is.
And so how do you differentiate? Like, how do you, right now, you have like, you just said you have 50% of your staff that's younger.
Yes.
And they're designers. But specifically, like, the people going out and selling.
Mm-hmm.
The differentiator of yeah. you. How do you corral them to be in their humanness first?
I make them tell the stories.
Okay, good.
I make them tell the stories.
Okay.
Because they do the same thing that you're referring to that your team does. It's not so much the data as it is our portfolio of work.
Right? Okay, good.
We have a million photos of cool events right. that we've done. Oh, wasn't that pretty? Isn't that neat? Isn't that fun? And they fall into the trap.
Yes.
It's far easier.
I know.
Of talking about the stuff in the picture. And
yeah.
I'm like, it's not about the stuff.
No.
The stuff was the result.
Exactly.
That was the end of the dog's tail.
That's the outcome.
That's the outcome.
How we got there.
How we got there is the story that we bring to the table. Why did they come to us?
Right, in the first
place. They came to us because we can help them solve a challenge they put forward. It doesn't mean, yes, is there going to be an AV screen? Okay, great. Is there going to be lighting? Sure. Is there going to be audio so they can be heard? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's all stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And whether we provide it or someone else provides it or a partner they already have provides it, that's fine. But as an agency, mm-hmm. which we've worked very hard to develop because we started as a production company.
Right.
And that's our foundation. And I've worked very hard in the last 12, 15 years to develop that agency model where the creative and the strategy and the engagement with the client around their goals is the discussion.
You got
and the
it.
The stuff is the result.
Right, right.
And so teaching the team to have the picture on the screen, sure, it's lovely. It's a very lovely picture. It shows,
yes.
you know, shows our, you know, creative capacity. But don't talk about the stuff on the screen. Talk about how we got to the decision
right.
to have that stuff that's on
right,
the screen.
Right, right.
And that's where the differentiator for me
mm-hmm.
is so critical
mm-hmm.
because there's lots of companies that can build scenery. There's lots of companies that can do beautiful lighting and
sure.
UAV and make people heard in an audio capacity, right? That's all. Everybody in the world has, you know, got skills that can accomplish that. But we're bringing a unique skill set
mm-hmm.
in our perspective
mm-hmm.
to their challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we should be talking about.
Right.
And so how you do that with especially some of the newer sales folks that come on is tell the stories,
right.
tell the stories so that they can personalize the stories.
Well, they need to, and they don't know a story yet that is attached
right?
to them.
Exactly.
So it
exactly.
there's a loss. Right. There's
absolutely.
Loss
they can't
in
personalize their experience.
Yet.
Yes.
And now
yes.
then you have the pandemic and you have people working from their homes. And how
yeah.
do we, I mean, how do you like leading
yeah.
now?
Yeah.
How do you like leading now?
Yeah. It's that constant. So, you know, I'll do the deck.
Yes.
And I'll just ramble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
We did this. Oh, this was the one where so-and-so had this challenge and this was how we solved it.
Right. And this is what we talked about.
This is how we achieved it. This is
right.
what they came to us with right. their goals and what their concerns were. And this is how we guided them to come up with this solution, which was phenomenally received and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, and you're right, until they have a win
mm-hmm.
with a client that then they can use that as part of their personalized storytelling.
They must repeat
their
stories.
They're repeating stories from others,
right.
which is not easy to do.
It isn't.
Because it's not yours.
Right.
And so you can't make it authentic.
Right.
It's hard, to make it authentic unless you're so enamored of the story that you go, yes, this was cool. Let me tell you this story.
Mm.
Because what ends up happening
mm-hmm.
is they appear as if they're an outsider.
Right.
To the company.
Right.
And I say this all the time. I say, you're telling the story like you're not part of we.
Yes. Well, this is...
You're telling the story as they.
Mm-hmm.
Like VDA is the company and you're telling our story. And I appreciate that you are trying to tell the story, but it has to be your story.
Right.
And so
and your authenticity has to connect to it and your values, right? I mean, I really think right now because of the gap that every company is feeling around culture, around people, around training and development, around there's lost storytelling is this the power of connection and how we're going to connect, and we got to work at that. I mean, it's not just going to happen.
No. It's constant, and that's the folks that have been here longer spend time telling stories. It sounds silly, but we just tell stories. We just have conversations, and everybody laughs at our meetings last longer than they should. It's because I let people go off on tangents because they're telling stories around a particular, we're working on a project right now, say, and it reminds everyone that's been here for a long time of this project we did 3 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it might be. And they'll tell the story. And in most situations, it's like, okay, fine. Let's focus on the now.
Right.
I don't. I let the story wander because everybody else in that room
is learning.
Has now learned that story.
Right. They're learning.
They learned the history, and they can now recognize how it connects to this moment. So now they can use that and say, well, the project that you're bringing to us, is very similar to a project we did 3 years ago, and these were the results of some of that, and we wanted to make sure that we didn't repeat those, or we thought that these were some best practices we discovered, right? And so they can feel like they have some knowledge. So they're telling the story a little bit from their perspective.
You got it. Yeah. Right. And then the other part that I love that you're saying is this connectivity, because right now, all the companies that our Cultures Division works with, it's all about inclusion. Right. And we're actually moving from DEI to inclusivity. We're just inclusive. How do you get all voices? All voices matter. I don't care if someone's in finance. I have a CFO who's so creative. He loves being brought into creativity. Who would ever think? So
voices to be heard.
To be heard.
Absolutely essential.
So what about you, and what keeps you going in this time? I know you love what you do, because I can tell. But you've also made a choice to stay doing what you love instead of being Uber everything to everyone.
That is the biggest piece. That's the biggest piece. And that was a decision made so long ago, it's hard to
remember.
I mean, I know there's specific sort of pinpoints along there, but it was a recognition. I was at a project with Prudential in Puerto Rico. And I remember one of my original business partners and I sitting on the beach at 9, 10 o'clock at night, just looking out at the water. Sitting there and him saying, we really should be thinking about what we want.
Wow. Imagine.
Out of this company.
Right.
Not just feeding the company.
Right.
And it's an interesting, and it got me really thinking about what is it that is my interest? What do I want to do? What do I want my life to look like? And as much as you can control that, which we all know, you only control a very small percentage of it, as you're buffeted by life and everything else comes along, was that I really did enjoy and still do enjoy meeting with a client, listening to their challenges that they put forward, understanding what they're trying to achieve, and then helping to create an environment and a structured program that helps to meet those goals that they put forward. I love that challenge. I used to be the guy who would build the scenery, load the lighting on the truck, go to the job site, install it, traveled the world, installing stuff all over the world. I don't travel very much at all, except for conferences and things that I'm attending, because I'm now, my passion is more on the front end of the process. And I love to hear the success stories. We just finished a big job in Vegas, and the client sent a note that was just over the top.
Phenomenal.
More capital letters going amazing and all that, which I love in those kinds of notes. And I take great pride in it. But I'm more fascinated when they write in there, the design that you did was absolutely perfect. And I'm like, thank you.
Yes, right? Yes.
This is a prideful moment, right? Even this long into my career.
Of course.
That just, like you said, that personalization of the design, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it was my idea, it came out of my brain, it came out of my experience, and to have the client say it did exactly what we wanted and it exactly what you said that it could achieve.
It did.
Right. I love that.
Right.
But I have moved on from that project a month ago.
Right.
Or 2 months ago.
Right. Right.
I was no longer connected to it.
Right.
Because I created it. I had the meetings. I did whatever. I handed it over to my production team and my project management team. And
you let go.
And they, an occasional maybe touch point here and there, but I wasn't connected to it anymore. So then it's like, oh, when was that project? You know,
right.
In some ways.
Right, right.
You know, because my, what keeps
Peace.
Me going,
mm-hmm.
my, what keeps me going happened months ago.
Right.
You know, the love of, I you can't say the hunt because it's not really a hunt, but you know, the love of the, that you not got the client, but the client trusted you enough to accept your idea as their foundation for moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. First, like that CEO, right? Learning how to engage with them to help them to recognize that we're the right organization, that we have the right ideas, that
right.
we're going to help
be
them,
with you,
help them
right.
be successful,
right?
And then to see it through to fruition. I love that challenge up at the front end. I love the strategy challenge. I love the concepting. I love the interactions, the human interactions.
Right.
You know, I say that all the time. It's like when you're designing, and I teach my young designers this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the design of a room is not, does it look nice?
No.
It's, how is it going to be experienced?
Right.
Yeah. When I walk up to this door,
mm-hmm.
what's the first thing you want me to see?
Mm-hmm.
And now design it with that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first thing you want me to experience?
Mm-hmm.
And how am I going to engage with that?
Mm.
Whether it's a physical or ephemeral lighting experience or audio
right.
or even scent, right? At
sure,
times we bring
sure.
that in. And so learning the human factor, how mm-hmm. are people going to interact with this? How do people think? You know, I talk about it all the time. Is it an international audience? They're going to perceive it differently than an American audience.
Sure. The integration of international with American.
And how do you make sure there's a balance that they recognize? You know, I mean, it's a silly thing, but in America, we read left to right.
Mm-hmm.
We've been trained our whole lives to look left first
mm-hmm.
because the car is coming down the road,
mm-hmm.
right? So in a design capacity,
mm-hmm.
when you walk into a room, you don't look right first. I guarantee it.
I think you're right. I know you're right. Yeah.
So understand the powerful
right.
is over there.
Right.
And
right.
the discovery is over there.
Right. That's so cool. That's
and
so
those
cool.
are silly little,
well,
but understanding how they're going to interact and understanding people, like, you know, when doing in the exhibit world, when we do trade show work and so on, people don't like to feel trapped.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
go to an exhibit. They don't want to walk into an exhibit that is all
and feel claustrophobic.
They want control
yes.
of their life.
Yes.
So they want to be able to get out
get
if
out.
They don't. You know, if
right.
I bumped in and I saw Kip, it's like,
yeah.
well, I don't like her.
I don't want to be with her.
I don't want to be here. This isn't comfortable, and
uh-huh.
I can't get out.
Uh-huh.
They're not going to look at your company very positively.
Right.
Even if their interaction with the person wasn't great, the company now takes on a different
the brand
aura,
of the
brand,
firm.
Right?
Right.
And so recognizing how to create those ways out, if you will, or those comfortable
mm-hmm.
ways in and
mm-hmm.
so on.
So what did you...
psychology.
Yes. Well, I love psychology because I think it's all psychology,
it's all
right?
psychology.
I mean, it really is. It really is. But, you know, so, I mean, you and we talked about this a little on the phone, too. It's the aura,
mm-hmm.
right? Authenticity, aura. I think organizations take on the aura of a leader. I do believe that.
I would like to believe so.
Yes.
Yes.
And
yes.
then how does that aura permeate through
mm-hmm.
and then go out to
right.
the clients, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the whole
yeah.
alignment.
Yes.
And there's so much happening right now. Do you work with healthcare at all?
Very little.
Okay.
Very
okay.
little. No, that's not an area of our focus.
Okay. Yeah.
Mostly in the tech space is a lot of our, you know, a good portion of our clients.
Yeah, tech space. Well,
yeah.
And so, you know,
it's cold at times.
Well, this is the thing,
so
right?
How do you personalize
that? Well, how do you personalize tech? How do you bring the human to life?
Yes.
Because it's so knowledge based and edgy, right? We got to be edgier.
Yes.
And they think because we have the shiny penny that we're going to go public or we're going to da 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 da.
Right. And, but it's still human connection.
Well, and you're leaving humans dying on the field.
Yes.
I mean, if you look at emerging tech companies, they have a very high risk for turnover.
Oh, turnover's huge.
Right?
Yes.
Because it's so driven by the concepts, but not the people.
The focus is technology and not the people that are developing.
Yes. So there's a lot of blame in that space.
Yes.
There's a lot of shame
blame.
In that space.
Yep.
How do you meet that? How do you overcome that?
I can't control their brand's
culture, can't.
Right?
No.
But I can create an environment that has people see their company perhaps a little bit differently.
And
that's the key. And I have those conversations with a lot of the high level leaders when we have those meetings is, going back to the very first thing that I said, what do you want your attendees to experience? How do you want them to feel about your organization?
Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
is the goal? And if they say just tech, I will counter.
Good.
But the tech is driven by the people.
You got it.
And so we need to think about how are we engaging those people in the story?
Yes.
Not just... Isn't this a cool piece of technology?
Yes.
If it's just a cool piece of technology, ultimately, there's no connection to it.
Right.
And if there's no connection to it, while it might be cool, I don't know what its longevity can be.
Right.
At least from me.
Right.
Tech is great. And, the new AI things.
Oh, my God.
Both exciting and scary.
It is, isn't it? What is your thought on AI?
We use it.
Mm-hmm.
We use it in our creative teams.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to a leadership summit in Vegas that I was part of, and they quoted me in the white paper just talking about how we use it to ideate.
Mm-hmm.
We'll plug in.
Sure.
And it won't put out the right ideas, but it might put out ideas we didn't think of.
It'll stir you.
And it shortens the creative process.
Creative.
It gives us maybe some guidance. Oh, let's explore that.
Right.
Because someone else might not have come up with it.
Right.
And my creative team uses it all the time in the creation of the renderings and the pretty pictures and how we represent to the client. If we're using photos from a photo from a site visit or from a ballroom or something, and has people standing in front of it. It's amazing.
Mm.
You draw a circle around it. It's like that, what's that phone that is on Magic Johnson? Where he does a circle and the person disappears in the background.
Yeah,
it's the same thing.
It's
the
same.
The AI sees the background, defines what it might be, and then says, we'll just make it look like this. And then, so it saves them so much time in Photoshop or in any of the other Adobe programs. And so there's a lot of value in that. My sales team has started using it in some of their writing of concepts and ideas. They'll take the idea that we put forward and they'll say, write something, and then they can pick and choose things. Saves them a lot of writing time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been finding my clients, and this was fascinating, they've been typing in, let's say they want to go to Toronto, and they need to look at venues that have 200 seats. They type in all that data.
The desires.
And the AI spits out all the locations that are their best options. And they're not just hotels.
Right.
It might be a museum. It might be an art gallery. It might, it's a very interesting reduction in the amount of space they spend calling and chasing venues.
Right. And that's one person's job.
Right. Right.
To spend the day.
It spits it back in minutes.
Wow.
So that I found really fascinating.
That is
as
fascinating.
A way of exploring that. So I think it has huge uses. I still wonder, where it will go.
Right.
But I think that there's enough people that are looking at it from a concerned perspective that, I don't think it's going to take over the world. Right?
I don't either.
I'm not worried about that. It's still a human, it's a human tool.
Right.
But I do feel that how it gets used and as it grows and the knowledge that it obtains from, because every time you input a question and it explores that question, it learns.
It learns.
So, is Hal in our future? I don't know.
Right. Who has been your mentor in your life?
Who's been my mentor in my life? It's been You know, it's hard to say. It really is. My parents divorced when I was quite young. Mm-hmm. I had no relationship with my father to speak of. So, mm-hmm. you know, my grandfather was very influential in my early days. It's interesting. I just reconnected with my old high school music teacher.
Wow.
Who was incredibly influential in my life. And I'd lost touch with her in the middle of
What inspired you to connect?
I got a note from a former high school friend who said that it's her 80th birthday coming up.
Yeah.
And just wanted me to know that they were thinking of having a gathering. And I was I haven't talked to her in so long. Mm. And so I went searching for her, and I found her. And she took me to my first Broadway show. You know, she was when I was in college, and you know, she and her son needed to get to New York, and so she knew that I had a car, and I like to drive, and so she called me and said, "Would you be willing to take my son down to my, you know, his father's house, and I'll pay you back by taking you to a show?"
That is awesome.
And I was like, "Sounds like fun to me." I was all, you know, 19 years old or what, 18 years old, and so, you know, just the influence of that, you know, how I ended up at Emerson College, which is where I went to school, was as a result of her and set me on a trajectory.
Yeah, and look at you now. You know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
Who would have thought? No. Like the theater music guy turns
exactly.
this
into
right
the corporate side. Yeah,
no,
I say that to people all the time. You know, the industry that I make my living in now didn't exist when I went to school.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so,
wow.
You know, so for me, it was, and then beyond that, the mentors that I'm with a lot in school, a lot of people that guided me and acted in those capacities too.
Yeah. Those are such formative years.
Those professors that were just so critical to me. And, you know, that was really a very strong. And then after that, you know, it's hard. I mean, it's a lot of, you know, I was always enamored of the leaders in this industry, but didn't really have relationships with them. I tend to be, as much as I'm an extrovert, I tend to be introverted when it comes to industry stuff. I don't really like what I call kissing babies and shaking hands.
Yes,
you know, it's just not my thing.
Yes.
I don't find it to be.
You don't love being out there.
No, but then when I do get out there, I realize, you know, people kind of like me.
Right, you know? Yes, I'm kind of likable.
And think, boy, I should have been doing this when I was younger.
Now you're going to train the next gen.
Exactly, it's all good, right? It's all good. But from a one-to-one mentoring, again, a lot of it is going to those industry conferences, meeting other people that are in. There was a program at Boston College that I got associated with. It was all CEOs of local companies. And it was a once-a-week meeting for the course over a course of 2 months or 3 months. And I got to know CEOs of construction companies.
Yeah, that's fun,
CEOs
right?
Of companies that had nothing to do with what I did. And,
right.
And the biggest thing, I think, and it might be mentoring, it might not be mentoring, was doesn't matter what size the company, doesn't matter what industry.
Yeah.
The challenges that we're dealing with are the same.
They are.
They're the same.
They are. They are. And it's the challenge, I think, right now, the humanness challenge.
Yes.
Right?
That's exactly what it is.
Right.
It's that humanness challenge is across all industries, across all sizes of companies. And so that, for me, it's not, you can call it mentoring or not, but it was very self-informative to recognize that, okay, I'm not just screwing up.
Mm-mm.
I'm not the struggles I'm having every day
are real.
We're all having them. The world is trying to solve them. And you know, if you approach them with some authenticity, you approach them with some belief in the good.
Yes.
You know,
the greater good.
I'm not necessarily an overly religious person, but I do believe in the goodness of the human race, despite all of everything you read every day. And I feel that's a foundation for me.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Any regrets that you have?
I think that it probably is. In the last 3 to 5 years, I've gone, and not, pandemic notwithstanding, I've gone to those leadership summits. Mm-hmm. I've been invited to those leadership summits. You know, my company, I got recognized as a 15 over 50 in the event industry for the work that I do. And you know, my company is now a top 100 agency recognized by the, you know, industry pundits in the events industry. And I kind of wish that I had maybe put myself out there a little more early on. I liked sitting in the background. I liked the designing. I liked meeting with the clients. And I didn't really engage in the industry side as much as I could have. And I find now that I might have found other people, not better people, but just different people in my industry. And I've now the connections that I'm making are amazing.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, every time I go to one of these things, I get quoted in the white paper. I get represented in the thing because... I guess I have a few things that maybe
But maybe your time is now to
so I'm learning to put myself out there more.
Doing the same thing.
And that is for me, it's not as easy because I like to sit in my room and design and create those jokingly pretty pictures and so on and strategize and come up with how do I make sure my culture is solid and my company's moving forward.
Right.
And I love, that's what I love to do. And the going out and getting on a plane and meeting with people and so on, they're fun.
Uh-huh. But I'd prefer. I get it. Well, so then when I called you and wanted you to do this, what'd you say in your mind?
In my mind? I same thing.
I was
like, why not? Sure, let's try it. Let's do it.
But there's the other part of like, do I really feel like
right. Well, and I'm not a morning person, so I laugh when you're like 9 a.m. I'm like, all right, well, at least it's near my house. You know?
We could have gone at 10.
No, I didn't. It was just funny.
I'm
a old theater guy.
Yeah.
You know, my world lives in the evenings.
Right. Yeah, you're a night owl.
Yeah, I'm a night owl. Oh, yeah. People joke about it all the time. They always
great.
Like, they'll say, yeah, I'll see 5 a.m. I said, yo, I'll usually see it from the other side.
Well, so you got it. I'll be going to bed at 5.
Yeah, right, because I've been up all night designing and creating something because then my brain got going.
Yeah, that's it. That's the left-right brain, right?
It really is.
Oh, my
really
God. Is. Yeah. Well, what a pleasure. Is there anything you wish I had asked you?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, it was really just about having a conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, I've known you to watch you for years and the success you've had in your industry.
Gosh,
and I love that. And so.
Yeah,
I
we were surprised we had never met.
Yeah, that we were able to connect. It's
and now I'm thinking about clients for you too. Mm. So that's kind of fun.
Right.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I loved it. It was beautiful. Muggy
thank
as it is.
You. I know. Thank you. Thank you, David. And just where can, I'll do an intro, but where can people find you? Just your
the
access
the website
to
is vdainc.com,
vdainc.com.
And I'm just David Atch.
You're David Atch.
Look
them up.
We're a first name company. All
there
of
you
my
go.
People,
I
except
love
where
it.
There's the two names. I have two marks. So, you know, things like that. But for the most part, you know, that's where we live. And there's all the Instagram and LinkedIn and Facebook and all those silly places that we put all of our pretty pictures and tell our stories.
Right, right. Good. Well, so here's to storytelling.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
We invite you to click subscribe and listen to our other walks. You can also visit HollisterGroup.com where there is free culture resources, including guided meditations, a blog of insights, and professional training and enrichment programs. The music and song you heard during this podcast, Inner Sovereignty, was performed by Chad Hollister and written by Kip Hollister and Chad Hollister. Thank you for taking a walk.
Inside is the doorway out. Inside is the doorway to my inner sovereignty, where I'm free to be. Energy of me, my inner sovereignty, inner sovereignty, where I'm free to be, the energy of me, my inner sovereignty, my inner sovereignty.